This episode of the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast is brought to you by Spectacle Eyewear. Now, if you've been watching any episodes of this podcast on our YouTube channel, you might have noticed I've been wearing some pretty cool specs lately. Well, you know where I get them? Spectacle Eyewear, 505 Tremont Street, Boston, Massachusetts. Their phone number is 617-542-9600. Head down to Spectacle. Go visit our friend Paul. You'll get yourself some cool specs. Being the big vinyl lover that I am, I'm proud to tell you about Joe's Albums and their two locations. The original shop at 317 Main Street in downtown Worcester, Massachusetts, and their second location out in Western Mass at 5 Market Street, Northampton. Both of these shops are loaded with both new and used vinyl. It's hard to walk in either shop and walk out empty-handed due to their amazing collection of records and other cool goodies like t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. If you can't find what you're looking for in the retail stores, check out their website, joesalbums.com. Thank you, Joe, for being so cool.
Yeah.
Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. We started you off with a track from Kind today. That one's called Snag. It's from the 2023 album Close Encounters. Great band, Kind. We had to get a little heavy for today's guest, Brandon Baddick, who's the host of the fantastic metal podcast called Disturbing the Priest. Yes, that's a title of a Sabbath song, if you don't know. Brandon is also a comic who does stand-up all around New England, the whole New England area, at least for the time being, because we find out today he's relocating to Austin, Texas. He's a cool young dude. We met at a record store that he was working at. We started talking. We hit it off. I invited him on the show. Anyway, we get into a really fun, rather lengthy conversation. And rather than just tell you all about it, we're just going to get right to it today. All right? So here I am with Brandon Baddick. Enjoy. Welcome to those of you watching on YouTube. This is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. If you want to hear this entire show with intros, outros, and music, please go to Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, etc. Please welcome to the show, comedian and the host of the Disturbing the Priest podcast, Brandon Baddick. Hi, Brandon.
It's an honor, man. Thank you so much for having me.
It's an honor having you on. I love having people that also do podcasts because they understand everything that we go through.
Exactly. The struggles, the heartaches, you know, the hell of just sitting on Zoom, waiting for the guy to join. You're sitting there for an hour. He never does. You know, you're back and forth with the manager for like 8 months. It's great. It's a
so you've had
a great
that
hobby.
I've had that happen to me like three times where I had a Zoom and no one ever came on. And then an hour later, oh, I'm sorry, something came up. And I'm like, hello, couldn't you let me know before we're going to do the show? You're letting me know like after?
If any bands are watching this, it's like, you know, if you don't want to do an interview, just say it. You know what I mean? Just say you don't want to do it, because there have been bands that I'm still in talks with. That because it's like, you know, I also just can't give it up. I feel like it's a part of the chase where you just cannot like just stop chasing a manager or whatever, where there's people who I swear to God, it's like a 50 chain link email thread, you know, that started like 2 years ago, that every now and again, you know, we'll
go
back
alone.
And forth.
You are not alone. Believe me, I've had some guests. It's taken me a year. There's a couple still I'm trying to get on that I started to try to get when I started this 289 episodes ago. I think that's what I'm at right now.
Wow.
You know, so it happens, man, you know, and it takes but you know, sometimes it's worth it. And, you know, I don't mind when they say I'll do it, but I don't want it. Have my face on Zoom, so I black them out. I noticed that happened to you a couple times too, where you're doing the interview and the other person is like, you know, I had one very famous guest. I won't mention her name, but if anyone listens to this show, they'll know I'm talking about. She just didn't want to be on camera. So I'm like, okay, fine.
I respect it. You know, it's like, you know, I'm honestly just happy that they're even taking the time out. You know,
yeah,
it's a shock. That like, I can't believe you're even on my show.
It's a you've had some guests, great guests. I'm going to talk about that. You know, it's a lot of competition now too. You know, even though I only started mine in 2019, I feel like there's a million more podcasters now than there were then. You know, it's like, and these sites like my host, which was Anchor, and now is owned by Spotify, they're running constant ads that you hear, you want to start your own podcast? It's easy. You know, and I'm like, fuck, man, we don't need any more fucking podcasters. Go do something else, man. Let us be the podcast world, you know?
Exactly. Now half my listeners have a fucking podcast, you know? It's like it never ends, you know? There's always a see that. When I started, too, it's like, because I looked it up. Like I'd have someone on and like, let me just see how many like podcasts they've been on. And I'll look it up sometimes, be like, oh, Jesus Christ, you know, like I have to do a lot of research now, you know.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind if I have a guest that's been on other podcasts because I usually watch them. You know, I'll watch the podcast and just see what they're all about. I do my research. I can tell you do yours too, but there are people that don't. And a lot of my guests tell me they have those people. Those are the people I'm talking about that I wish wouldn't start a podcast. If you're not going to put the time in, hey, I understand you want to have fun and talk to people, and you might be able to get someone great. Anyone can, really, if you put your time into it. But let the professionals
let us professionals take care of it.
I started in college radio, and I think you did, so I feel like we paid our dues. You know, matter of fact, before we talk about your show, your great moniker, the Stoner Doom stand-up comedian, and never mind where we met, the record store where we met. I want to know a little bit about you. Like, where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Mass? Because I can't remember if you told me that or not.
Yeah, I was born in Framingham. I've been in Massachusetts my whole life. I've been here in Holliston. A small town. It really just exists to just go to other towns. That's all it really is. But it's cool, you know. I'm in central Massachusetts, which is nice, you know, because I feel like it's like an hour to go to Boston. It's like 40 to go to like Providence. It's 30 for Worcester. So like, you know, I feel like I'm at a good spot. You know, it'd be cool to be in a major city, but I like being able to kind of like be a drifter in that sense, you know. But yeah, man, I've been in Holliston. I'll be moving in a couple months.
Where are you going?
Time. Texas.
Oh, you mentioned that. Yeah. San Antonio.
Austin.
Okay. Well, those are the best two places in Texas, I think. Austin and San Antonio. I know people in both those, a lot of musicians in both of those cities. Austin more so, you know. Austin's like the center. Well, you know, you can't say that because Nashville's in the south, but it's pretty close to being like the second most important music city, I'd say, in the south.
And it's working towards being maybe the best. And it's the greatest comedy scene in the country as well.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So is that
Austin, Texas? Oh, yeah.
So that's why you're going there, for the comedy scene?
It's for a couple reasons. The first reason is because
what's her name? What's her name?
Starla. All right. No, I can't do it anymore, man. The snow, the ice. I can't. I've been here 25 years. I can't do it. I've always fantasized about being somewhere warm. I don't care if it's 120, you know, and I can fry an egg on the road. I just want to be away from this weather. That's the first thing. Second thing is the music scene. Amazing music scene. I feel like every band now, if they do a tour, we got to do Austin, you know, and say they don't.
Bands come from there too. So,
oh my God. Tell me about it.
Now you're only 25 years old. Wow. Yeah. You're years above your age, my friend.
I'm 25 going on to 40.
Wow. You don't come across as like a 25-year-old to me, especially with your knowledge of music, you know. Did you get into metal at like an early age? Metal's your main forte, so I'll ask you. Did you get into it at an early age, or was there other music that you were listening to before metal?
Oh yeah, like, well, my first band was obviously like the Beatles, you know what I mean? That was pretty much the jumping off point. And then, you know, from there, like being into middle school and stuff, I was just listening to like top 40 radio, you know, like whatever all my friends were listening to. It's like, why don't I like Blurred Lines as much as everyone else? You know, I just don't understand it. And then in high school, freshman year, I really just stopped listening to music altogether. I listened to a couple, like maybe like some Bowie and some classic rock, but that was about it. And then I joined the radio club, and you get partnered with people. And there was this other, you know, kid in all black sitting in the corner. I'm like, hey, that might be the guy to partner
Sounds
with.
About right.
Sounds about right. We sit down and I'm, I don't, we're playing music and I'm throwing like you know, Stairway to Heaven or whatever. He puts out War Pigs. I'm like, what the hell was that? And then after that, my life was ruined. So
this is a high school radio club?
High school radio club. It was so crazy.
I didn't have one of those. Damn.
It was so wild because all it was an aux. It's not like a system where you have to look up the song, you know. All it was to broadcast is you had a little plug, you put it in your phone, and you could just broadcast it. It was like the most powerful aux.
Wow.
Ever.
You know what's really funny is I should have mentioned this before, but I have to mention it now. While you were growing up in Framingham, the first place I ever did radio was at Framingham because I went to Framingham State and WDJM was the radio station.
Yeah.
And I started as a DJ there and then I became the music director. So we were really, well, wait a minute, you weren't born, you might not have been born then.
Yeah, but we have very similar lives. Like, that's so interesting you tell me that because I was the music director at my college.
Well, and okay, which, well, before, let me get to, I want to work my way up to that. I'm curious about your listening. So the kid played War Pigs for you. And then after that, did you dig deep into metal or just Sabbath or what?
And then after that, I found out there's this thing where you can pay a subscription fee and you can get unlimited music. Then I discovered Spotify. And from there, I'm like, wait, I love this song, War Pigs. I spent 99 cents for it, or I can have my parents pay a monthly fee and listen to everything. So
yeah.
So once I got Spotify, I literally, you know, I hear a lot of people, and it's funny interviewing people because they'll tell stories where, like, you know, I saw that first Sabbath album, you know, and then it was like the wait for the next one. I literally got Spotify and front to back listened to the discography.
Good for you.
Started with Sabbath One and just worked my way down.
I like that too. You got to start the beginning. I'm the same way, man. Even on podcasts, I like to go all the way back to the beginning, you know? So was there anything else besides Sabbath or did you just go into that dark world for like a long time?
I used to be in high school. I would just skip class and just walk up and down the hall listening to Sleeping Village, the last track off Sabbath One. And I would also listen to a bootleg where Tony extends it. It's like a 30-minute jam. It's like the coolest thing ever. So I used to just walk up and down the hall. And then I'm like, you know what? I've always wanted to like really get into Metallica. You know, I like Sabbath. I feel like that's the next step. Again, started with Kill 'Em All, worked my way up. And then I had a friend be like, Megadeth's better. I'm like, what's Megadeth? You know? And then, you know, my life was ruined even more after that, where it's like,
so
you
is
cannot
Megadeth,
get any better.
So
oh,
is
yeah.
Megadeth better than Metallica? Wow, it's interesting you say that.
Yeah.
See, I'm not
it's
a huge
one of my favorite bands.
Well, I think we talked about this when I was in the stores. I like, you know, the Chris Pollin years, you know, and you know, there's been good stuff since then. I've never been a diehard Metallica fan, but I've seen them so many times in concert, you know, especially in the early days. You know, I worked at Metal Blade, you know, and Brian Slagle was the guy that pretty much found those guys, you know, and same with Slayer, you know. I mean, so when I was back there in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, he had hooked me up with Lars once, and I talked to Lars on the phone for like an hour about the history of the new wave of British metal, because we put out this double album, you know, with Diamond Head and all those bands on it, you know, and Lars knew more about it than anybody, you know. So it makes sense to me that you would go from at your age that you would go from Sabbath to Metallica, because where did Metallica start? They started by listening to Sabbath, basically. They'll tell you that, you know, and they worked with their way up from that point.
Then I got into like Motorhead, of course. And it's like, you know, to build off the point you were saying, like, I feel like British New Wave, that's one of my favorite genres ever. I think it is like, it is pretty much proto thrash metal. I feel like that's what it is. It is so good. And unfortunately, like every single one of those bands were screwed over. Every single one, pretty much. By all labels, all Neat Records, all like the worst. It was just, it was really tragic, really Iron Maiden and like Def Leppard and a couple others were like the only ones who were really able to survive that era. But Metallica, Lars, you know, he knows pretty much, like you said, more than anybody. And his whole thing with Metallica was to bring Motorhead to the States. That's from an interview I heard with him, really? Which is so cool. Yeah, yeah. So he just wanted to make the American Motorhead, and it became this monster nobody thought it would. That's what's so cool.
You know, it's really Mark. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, you go.
All good. I have this friend Mark DeVito. I've had him on my podcast. He grew up in the Bay Area. He's a painter too. He's like an artist. He did he painted Motorhead's last record. He redesigned the Metallica logo once. He did art for Metallica, you know. And it's so interesting. Like, I was talking to him, and he's like, "Listen, man, if anyone tells you that they knew what the scene would turn into, they're fucking lying. Nobody knew what any of these bands were going to turn into." You know, and then you sit here and you look at Metallica now, and they're like one of the biggest bands where it was just such a neat, like, just tight knit scene. And now it's like everyone's these fucking giants. It's crazy.
It's amazing too, because the bands that were scrutinized that way, the metal way, the same thing happened with the punk and the hardcore kids. You know, they were scrutinized the same way. And now, all of these bands that you never would you ever imagine that Metallica and Green Day are like the two biggest bands in the world? I mean, when they came out, Kill 'Em All came out, people were like, what's that? Green Day was just these three stupid kids from Berkeley, California. No one thought they would ever go anywhere. Motorhead, here's a funny thing. I can't tell you when the first Motorhead record came out. You'll probably know, but I do remember this. In 1984, there was a band from San Diego called Battalion of Saints, and they covered Ace of Spades. And that's the first time I heard Ace of Spades, and I'm like, what the hell is that? And then someone was like, that's not even their song. And that's when I discovered Motorhead. That was 84. What year did Motorhead? Because Hawkwind was much earlier than that.
Hawkwind was like 70s. And yeah. I think late 60s, if I, you know, I'm not sure when Lemmy, I don't know the whole history with Lemmy and Hawkwind. I do know that there is the song Motorhead. It is a Hawkwind song.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? And then he went to, Lemmy sings on it, and then he just turned that into his own, which, what a great name.
I had a feeling that when I started talking with you that we'd end up going in this direction and not in your life direction, but I'm trying. Did you play at all? Did you play at all? Do you play?
I can play a pretty mean Smoke on the Water. But I do a lot of, I wouldn't say I'm like really a guitarist. I'm more just like, you know, I have a Gibson SG that I've had forever, and I just really like to just do like doom on it, like just very slow power chords, you know, turn the fuzz all the way up. It's pretty much like the easiest metal you can ever play. But that's like my go-to. I have like several pedals, and I just, yeah, you know,
I've got like an acoustic guitar now, but I never really could play the way I wanted to play, you know. I decided at a young age, you know what, I'm going to be behind the scenes, you know, and that's well, why.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it's like, I kind of can relate to the point of where it's like, I have comedy, you know, I have the podcast. It's like, it gets to the point where it's like, how much am I trying to cram into my life? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like guitar, like in an instrument, you know, I could acknowledge that it takes like extreme dedication to really like get good at an instrument.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Wow. like that's like playing guitar and like learning scales and stuff makes me listen to like a band like Forbidden and be like, fuck, like what am I doing? You know, like I'm gonna stay in my own lane, I think.
When you were in high school and you became a metalhead and all that, you decided to go to college. What college did you go to?
I went to Curry College in Milton.
WMLN?
WMLN.
I'm only saying that because the sticker's up here. I do remember Curry had a good radio station, though, because you know all this when you work for labels. And I worked for a lot of independent labels. You had to know college radio. If you didn't know college radio, you didn't know what the hell was going on. It's changed now, though. Things have changed now. The internet's Sadly. Opened everything up. So people don't spend as much time on college radio as we did back then. Back then, if you wanted to find out where the cool shit was, you found the college radio station near you, and that's where you'd hear it, you know?
Yeah, and that's what makes it sad, because it's like, you know, when I went into college, I knew all that. That's the thing. Like, I'm super into like the 80s, you know what I mean? And like the 70s, and kind of like the whole culture of it, and even the idea of distribution with how you want to listen to the cool shit, you know, go on WMLN, and there's this station that'll play all the stuff that's gonna be big, that hasn't yet. Unfortunately, college radio now is people auditioning to be on iHeartRadio. Fortunately, that's what it is.
There's a few good ones, though. WMBR in Cambridge, you know, is fantastic. There are stations out there that are good. You know, it's just not DJM. When I went over there about a year ago, maybe it was before the pandemic, actually. I went over there to look for the college radio station. I found it, the place where me and all my friends hung out and smoked weed and played records all day. It's turned into an automated station. You know, I'm like, where's the disc jockey in here? And some kid comes in, oh, can I help you? I'm like, there's no one on the air. I'm like, oh, we're on the air. It's like all pre-recorded. I'm like, oh, man, that is just bunk. You know, that depressed me so bad because I was going to try and get a show there.
Well, I feel like that the internet has filled that void. You know what I mean? Like things have to evolve, and unfortunately things get pushed out of the way. Radio has been so corporatized, if that's even a word. And you're right. Like, there's some amazing college radio stations, but unfortunately you kind of have to dig for them now. There's schools that have stations that are just completely like, why don't I just listen to iHeartRadio at that point? Well, like, if I'm just listening to Taylor Swift's top hits, like, what's the point of even turning it, like, tuning into this? My show, my podcast, you know, if we're talking about a timeline here, started as a radio show.
Oh.
At WMLN, I hosted a show called Into the Void, which I later changed the name to a different Sabbath song. But I used to just
you
play.
I know, by the way, that Disturbing the Priest is from the Born Again album. I was going to ask you about that because I find it ironic that you pick up Ian Gillan song over an Ozzy song or even a Ronnie James Dio song, but it's still Tony Iommi, right? Well, I think on that record, wasn't it the first three guys were still there, right? On Born Again? Yeah, Geezer was there and same drummer, right? I mean, it wasn't. Or was Vinny
Bill? No, I think it was Bill.
Bill Ward. Yeah.
I'm trying to picture the back of the record right now.
There was one great, great song. I mean, the song you use for your podcast is a good song, but there was one song. It was just fantastic on that record. Just absolutely. The way it was recorded was kind of bizarre. It sounded so different.
Born Again, it's dog shit production. It is.
Yeah, it was just. It's surprising.
It reminds me of like the production of like a black metal album or something. But that's like for me, you know. And Tony Iommi's talked about, hey, I'm gonna like remaster it, remix it, you know. And it's cool, and I'm glad he's doing it, so maybe people can then appreciate it. But I don't know, man. You know, I think I love every single element of that record. You know, you put that on like late at night in the dark, and it's like for an album that came out in the 80s, I believe. It's pretty horrifying. It's definitely the eeriest Sabbath record, I think, and like one of the heaviest, and it's like like just so eerie, and that's what attracts me to it.
Yeah,
like,
you know,
like Tony, the energy coming out of it is so like scary.
Ian Gillan is like, he's great, man. I gotta look this up because now it's bugging me what song I'm trying to remember from that record. That
yeah,
I
there's
really
Zero
like.
The Hero.
Zero the figures.
Was that
right
it?
Before I get there. Yeah, Zero the Hero to me is a masterpiece. It's like 7 minutes and 37 seconds long too. That's
and there's this track that goes before it called The Dark, which is just like the most scary, like it's just like it's not even music. It's like a atmospheric track, and then the riff slowly fades in. The do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's so good. It's like that's at that point I was like sold on the record. I'm like, this is, how do people hate this? Because like I went into it like
it's because of, you know, Ozzy, man, you know, I mean,
I think
like,
it's the production. I think people, well, Ozzy obviously, you know, that is an element, but I think people hate it because it sounds like it was recorded with a toaster. Like it is just the worst recording.
Sabbath fans are funny, you know, because there's a whole group of people that love the Tony Martin records, you know. And personally, you know, it's really funny. I've had this conversation with my friend Duncan Wilder Johnson, who's a big Sabbath fan also. And he gets annoyed with me because I always tell him that Heaven and Hell is my favorite Sabbath album, you know. I just love that record, man. Ronnie's, you know, Mob Rules is pretty good too, you know. I mean, Ronnie James Dio. But you know, the point that they should have probably changed their name to Heaven and Hell before they did that is probably a good point. But you know, I'm not saying Ozzy's not the king of, you know, the mic in that band, but you can't disregard these other guys either, you know. I mean,
yeah, like I know what you mean, but for me, Sabbath will always be Iommi. Like, I feel it's like Dime, you know? That's, I have opinions about the Pantera reunion or whatever, but it's like, Black Sabbath, you can take out any member or whatever, and it's still Black Sabbath, but if you take out Iommi, it's not Black Sabbath. You know what I mean? He is the heart and soul of that band. It was really his band in the beginning too. Like he's the one who started it.
Okay, now let me preface this by saying I know that Freddie Mercury is the greatest singer of all time. Okay, if anyone's out there listening, I love Freddie. But you could say the same thing about Queen. If you took Brian May out of that band, I don't think it would be Queen.
It's a cover band.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Brian May and Tony Iommi are like best friends, you know? And it's like the similarity there is really, because, you know, Queen has gone on without Freddie. You know, Paul Rodgers and you know, they're doing it. I mean, it's not going to ever be that good, but Brian May's guitar sound's still there. And that's the same thing with Sabbath. You know, Tony's guitar sound never went away.
Never. And just how his playing style and everything, it's like, it's just so intertwined with the sound of that band. Like he is Black Sabbath, you know.
I agree with that.
Like you can even his solo album, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Seventh Star.
But it
was supposed to be a solo record. And then the label's like, oh, no, no fucking way. That's going to be a Sabbath album.
Well, they were afraid to get away from the name, you know?
Yeah, but still, like, that to me, you know, that's happened with other bands where Dave Mustaine, you know, wanted to do a solo album. But everyone's like, Megadeth's your solo career. What are you talking about? You know, with Black Sabbath, I feel like that's pretty much with Iommi. You know, it's his thing. At the end of the day, you can take out everybody and he is everything holding it together.
Okay, I'm gonna try this again. So Curry College is in Maine, right?
Milton, Massachusetts. It's like 20 minutes from Boston.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I thought I should know. I was really boneheaded, Steve. Milton, it's practically in Boston. I don't know much about that school.
Not a lot of people do. A Look, lot of people,
it, I
even I
Maine.
forgot about it.
I didn't even have it in Massachusetts. I moved it to another state.
I graduated like a little over 2 years ago, and honestly, I forget most of it too.
What did you
It's
major in when you went there?
I majored in communications, and I had a concentration in radio and broadcasting.
That's like, Framingham State. My main major was communications as well, but back then the competition was really fierce, to get a radio. There's no way I could have got a radio job. Although two guys that I did go to school with did end up doing really well in radio. Did you think about going into radio as a profession?
I did. I in college, I actually worked at iHeartRadio. I worked at iHeartRadio for like a little under a year.
Did they have a
And
physical location that you would go to, or was this like remote?
massive building. And I wanted to be a board op. I wanted to
In
be behind the
Boston?
scenes in Boston. Yeah, they have a massive,
Wow.
massive headquarter. But as much as I wanted to be on air, help put shows together, I love the creative element of things, building together like a show or whatever, making a script. They had me be street team. Now, if you're unfamiliar with street team, what they would do is I would show up and they're like, "Hey, you're jamming 98.5 or whatever. You're jamming today." So I'd put on my jamming shirt and I would get in a van that says jamming on it. And I would drive to some restaurant or some shit location, set up a booth and just promote the station. That's pretty much what I was doing for a year.
Yeah, it can be not
And
much fun.
one of them, and let me just say this about iHeart. iHeart sucks. They abuse their staff. People were working hours where they were crashing at the headquarters because you're scheduled to work till like 1 a.m. and then you're scheduled to come in the next day at like 8 a.m.
Ugh.
Which is like, that's one of the better days, if anything. So people were like just crashing at the place all the time. And it's like, what's going on here? One time we had to do a thing at a hookah bar. I parked the jamming van somewhere. We get out and it was towed. I got one of their
Oh,
vans towed. The
that
one
went over well, I'm sure.
iHeart jamming. Yeah. There was a big meeting about it the next week. But I'm like, what am I doing, man? I'm not a roadie for iHeart.
Yeah.
Like, this is not what I signed up for. I quit, and then a week after I quit, the whole street team got laid off. Everybody, I
Wow.
think iHeart, because they went bankrupt, I think a couple of years ago. They laid off like I think like half their staff or something, like just cleared house. So after I'm like, I'm gonna just try to find a job in like independent radio. You know what I mean? So I worked at WCRN in Westboro, I think it is.
Okay.
If you're unfamiliar, it's a right-wing talk radio
Oh,
show.
that must have been a blast.
But I got to be a board op. I got to be on the console. I used to do I'm not sure if you're familiar with Howie Carr.
No way.
But I was like Howie Carr and Peter Blute. I was the board op. So if you
Okay, I
call
don't know
us.
where you stand politically, but someone like me could never be go and hang out with those guys, man. That would be difficult.
Listen, man, I'm not right. I'm not right wing at all. Even though the stars are aligning, because I am saying I did work in right wing radio and I am moving to Texas. I
Yeah, but
honestly
Austin is
can't
not
stand
a
it.
Austin's like very liberal town, man. It's not like, believe me, you're gonna be fine in Austin.
Yeah.
It's just, I guess when you're young, you can do something like that and you're not filled up with all this like fucking pissed off emotion like someone that gets older, where we get, as you get older, you get set in your way. Like, fuck those guys, man. I'm not
Well, I was
gonna.
just trying to make a living. You know what I mean? It's
Yeah.
like the industry seems so competitive and impossible. So I'm like, you know, maybe if I can just do this for a little bit, I can get a job that actually doesn't feel like, you know, I'm selling my soul or something, you know.
Did they press you on your politics or anything while you were there?
Never, never,
that's
ever.
That's good.
Which was cool, and vice versa, you know. It was crazy, man, because I would like have to bring it into commercial. I'd have to fade up the mics. I did every single thing. And sometimes I would talk into the mic, because sometimes the guy would ask me a question or something and want commentary. I would do this thing where because they take calls. So it would be me picking up the phone, and then I would put you on hold until Peter Blute or whatever would put you in.
Yeah.
Listen, man, some of those right wing people listening at like 6 a.m. were fucking maniacs, man. There was this guy who called in. He's like, I'm outside right now with my military uniform covered in gasoline, and I'm about to drop the match. I want to talk to Peter Blute right now. I'm like, please hold. It's like the people calling in were like maniacs. Wow. Like, wow. People calling in. Apparently there was this woman who like found the station and like showed up to the door. Like, just maniacs, man. Like, crazy, crazy, crazy. It's, wow. Like, I don't think I'll work in.
So that didn't work out either.
Nope, not at all.
When did you decide, that's it, I'm just starting my own podcast and I'm gonna put all my energy into that?
I got fired from WCRN.
Your hair was too long.
Yeah.
Although the nudes, you know, I mean, I guess it's okay to have long hair and be a righty these days, right?
I guess it is, but it was a pretty interesting scene. It really was. They fired me in a pretty pathetic way. They just ghosted me. They never returned my messages. They never scheduled me again. It was like the most, like, all right, you know.
Now, was this an internship or did you actually get paid?
It started as an internship, and then I got a job there. And it was cool. Like, they really liked me. Like, they brought me to dinner sometimes. You know, I love fish. You know, that's another weird thing I'm into. Like, I used to have like giant, like 80-gallon fish tanks and stuff. I'm super nerdy with fish. And the station manager, you had like a massive fish tank. So me and him used to talk about it. I felt like I fit in, but, you know, apparently, you know, you have to, it's, you're not truly fitting in unless you have that red bumper sticker, you know,
wow,
on your car. So,
wow, I give you a lot of credit, man, for getting through that, man. I really do. I don't think I could have done that.
Well, now looking back at it, it's really taught me, you know, like, just be your own instincts are your only true God. You know what I mean? Like, just be yourself, and the path will carve out for you. You know, I feel like I was, back in the day, I was kind of sucking up to people a little too much. For example, like, why the fuck was I working with iHeart and right-wing talk radio, you know?
Here's the thing, you know, as much as you think you know when you're young, you always grow and gain wisdom as the years go by. I feel like I did a lot of things when I was young that I don't know why the fuck I did some of the things I did. You know, I got in the music business at a young age, though, you know? So my first job, I was not even, you know, I was 23. I bought a one-way ticket to LA, and I'm like, I'm working in the music business. But it was different back then than it is.
That's what
now.
I wish, man. Like, that's what I wish. You know, that the thing is, like, you know, I did get in big radio. I did get in independent radio, but the landscape has changed so much.
Yeah, it has.
It's not like you can really work for like even a label anymore. You know, such a different landscape.
You probably could, I bet. I think if you really tried hard to get a job at a record label, I think you could get one. You have the mentality and the knowledge, you know, like if you met Brian Slagle or someone like that, you know, Mike Gitter, you know, guys I know that are still in the industry, Monty Connor, they would like you, man.
I would I would honestly be honored to work at like Metal Blade or I'm not sure. Is Megaforce even still around?
No, I don't think Megaforce is around anymore. But
Yeah,
Brian,
where can I apply to Combat Records?
it's funny that I had someone else on my show recently who was talking, Keith Bennett was talking about Combat and Megaforce. And I remember those labels, you know, because I was there in the 80s, you know, and I always felt like Metal Blade. There was something cooler about them. It's hard to explain. Maybe it was the West Coast element, you know, because Brian was such a fan, you know, such a
Well,
fan.
yeah. I as someone who's seeing all this at once, you know, for me, what I think what for like even other metalheads my age, what stands out about Metal Blade is like again, like Brian's relationship with Metallica, the whole like the Betsy Bitch thing, the name of the label, famously really amazing. Sounding quality, amazing pressings. Where Combat, you know, it's like Bonded by Blood, you know, and then there's like the it's more the iconic albums tied to it. Where Metal Blade, I feel like, is iconic within itself,
You
more
know,
than the others.
and not just because I know all these bands and worked with them, but if you look at like Lizzie Borden, Fates Warning, Betsy Bitch, Armored Saint, they've all been with Brian like forever. I mean, if you don't stick around with someone if they're not taking care of you, you know?
Unheard of for a label in the 80s
You
too,
know, and then
you know.
Armored Saint did get a major label deal, but they ended up back on Metal Blade, you know? I mean, and Fates Warning. I mean, geez, everything that they do, every side project, John Arch, everything they do, it's always Metal Blade, you know? I mean, and I think that says a lot for Brian Slagle.
Have you read
And
his book?
the first one, but not the second one. I haven't got the second one yet.
I
But
have to read his books. I've heard they're really good.
I haven't read the second one that just came out a few months ago, but the first one is like the real history, and you know, I feel like I got I because I worked at Enigma Records before I worked at Metal Blade, and Enigma was distributing Metal Blade. I feel like I was there really early, you know, like really early on. Like Metal Massacre 1 was still a new record, you know, and I watched all those Metal Massacre records come out, and it's like they're compilations, if people don't know what I'm talking about, great compilation
Iconic.
albums. When you when you decided that you were going to get into the podcast thing, did you go right to the traditional way that we do it now, or did you start like a different way, like on your own website or something like that? How did you start Disturbing? You said it was
So
a different name before. Just
it was called Into the Void.
okay.
And it was my senior year, the final semester of senior year. And I go, I love this podcast. I hate iHeartRadio. I have a feeling I'm going to hate corporate radio. There's no way I'm ever going to be able to do anything like this, professionally, like on a other station. So I'm like, why don't I just start my own thing? So I'm like, I don't want to call it Into the Void. I think Disturbing the Priest. I thought about it for a while. Is such a cool name. Like it's like I think maybe the coolest name for like a song,
I love it, man. I love it.
and I think it just captures every single thing I'm going for, you know. So I went with that, and it started as an audio-only podcast where I'm like, okay, let me just go on a mic, record it in Adobe, and just like pick a subject every week and just talk about it. And so if you and there are, these are all on YouTube, by the way. I've archived all of these.
Yeah.
So if you go on my channel and you hit earliest, you will just see these, you know, 20
The
minute, you know,
progression.
I have the history of metal. I did a whole retrospective on the album Dope Smoker by Sleep. Because I decided 3 episodes in that I want this to be a doom metal podcast. I want to interview doom metal artists. I want this to be a whole doom metal thing. Apparently, doom metal artists aren't super into interviews. Apparently, they just like to smoke weed and just not deal with it. But I was inspired by like having other comics on And it's like, how about I have, because I do comedy also. And right after college, I really like, I was doing like six mics a week. And I really started like, you know, hanging out with comedians. So I'm like, why don't I have some of these guys on who are also into metal and stuff? So we would do, and you can also find this on the channel. So it started with these, you know, very traditional podcasts, and then it turned into like Zoom, like Sea of Tranquility, like, you know, we're doing the you know, five bands that lost their mojo, you know, and we would all go around a round table, you know, and those were a ton of fun. But the thing is, comics are the worst people to schedule. The absolute worst.
Well, I know when I wanted to schedule you, you're like, well, I can't do anything before 1 o'clock because that's when I wake up. I'm like, oh, okay. I usually do my podcast at 10 o'clock in the morning, dude, but I'll go out of my way for you.
I am snoozing in the a.m.
I'm going to ask you about your comedy stuff after we get through this segment, because I'm curious about that, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, man. Like, I got back last night at like 3 a.m. Like, I did two gigs last night back to back in Milford and Waltham. So it was just, and I was doing those, and
you
then
stand
I just,
up, right?
I'd stand up comedy. Yeah. That's and then fantastic. After the discussion stuff, I'm like, how about I just reach out to bands I like screw that. I hate comics. So I reached out to a band called Toxic. They're a thrash metal band.
Yeah, yeah.
I never thought they would ever respond. I sent it out to like bands with like 100 monthly listeners, and they were just the one where I'm like, I'm just gonna, you know, wing it. Hail Mary. They were the only one to respond, and they're like, let's do it. You can see it on YouTube. It's my first interview, and it's the entire band. It's the entire band. It was my first one. I was so nervous. And then after that, you know, I had for a while, I was stuck at like 10 subscribers. And then after that, I got like 20. I'm like, oh my God, you know, maybe like this is what people want to see me like interview artists. So from there, I reached out to more people. Then I think my second one was, which was like, I couldn't even sleep the night before because I was so nervous. Brian Tatler, of the guitarist of Diamond Head.
Yeah, I made a couple notes here about some of the guests you've had. Diamond Head, Saxon, Bobby Liebling from Pentagram, several, like just about everyone in Megadeth. Betsy Bitch, you know, who I'm scared to ask to come on my show, but one of these days I will. Ross the Boss, another one. Wow. He would have fit in good, by the way, at that that right-wing radio station that you worked
he
at.
He really would have. Yeah, man, it was so funny with Ross the Boss. I actually, some guy came into the record store I work at, which I don't work at anymore, by the way.
You're not at Never. I just saw you at Nevermind last week.
Yeah. I quit like two shifts after that.
Okay, never mind. We won't talk about that.
No. It's. I'm on good terms with Mick and everything. It's just with the move and everything.
Oh, you're moving. Yeah, you're moving.
Yeah.
Maybe you can work at Waterloo Records down in Austin. That's one of the great record stores in America.
I'll be applying there. Actually, I actually have the tote bag hanging on my door.
I used to have a Waterloo T-shirt, but that thing's long gone. That's
such
a
good
great
store.
Yeah,
such a good store. So some guy came into the shop once, and I told him about my podcast. He's like, "Oh man, you got to get Ross the Boss on it." He's like, he's a personal friend of mine. He's like, I'll call him. I'm like, huh? And he just called him. And he's like, hey, can you do this podcast? He's like, yeah, give me his number.
Who is the guy?
Was
he in a band or something?
No, he's just a guy who shops at the store a lot.
Well, you know, I liked Ross the Boss better than the Dictators. You know, Manowar was okay, but the Dictators were a great band. They weren't really metal.
The Dictators rip. They're great.
Punk band, you know? But yeah.
Shaken Street's good too, his other band.
Yeah.
But after that, so I got his number, and then I'm driving home and I get a call from New York, and I pick it up, and I hear a voice go, "Is this Brandon?" I'm like, "Is this fucking Ross the Boss?" And he's like, yeah, man, what's up? And he just like starts like just like shooting the shit with me. He's like, when are we doing this? I'm like, and I give him like, I'm like, let's do it 2 weeks. He's like, all right, whatever. Dude, I was reading articles on Man of War. I was so nervous because it's like, I don't want, this guy's a legend, you know?
Yeah.
But with Bobby Liebling too, like I had, that was a, I think I did his last interview. I don't think he'll ever do another interview.
You know, I had
after
the,
me.
When I was working, I was running a label called Giant Records in New York through Dutch East India. The guy that ran Dutch East one day called me and said, there's this guy, this metal dude, he's got this record and he wants us to distribute it. Will you talk to him? And it was Bobby Liebling. And I talked to him about Day of Reckoning. Remember that record, Day of Reckoning?
Yeah. Wow.
Big record. And by
wow.
That was way before the doom, anyone even called it doom metal or anything. They were like, they were just so early on in the game, you know? It's
would you
funny
call them the, would you call them the American Black Sabbath, Pentagram?
If you want to call them that, you can. Sure.
Can you argue that? Yeah.
No, I can't. It's funny because they're on they're on Metal Blade now, right? Pentagram.
I don't know.
I think they might be.
That band changes. I feel like they changed labels and members
well,
so
it's only
often.
Been Bobby. Bobby's the only one that's really been the constant in the band, right?
He's the Tony Iommi of Pentagram.
Yeah. But I saw that you had him on your show, and I was like, that's a score right there. And the other thing I wanted to talk to you about was Chris Poland, because I got to know
Great
Chris.
Stories.
I spent 6 weeks on the road with Damn the Machine, so I got to know Chris very well. And his, you know, what a nice guy, you know, really nice guy. You could tell
Wow.
He went through hell.
Wow. I didn't know you were on the road with them. Did you ever tell me that?
Yeah. When
Wow.
I worked at A&M Records, they sent me out and they said, we want you to go out with this band for a while. It started off for 2 weeks and I didn't come home for like six. You know, I had Dave Clemens on my show, but I haven't asked Chris yet. But
good luck ever getting him on, man.
Watching
it
Chris.
Took 6 months.
Watching Chris Poland play every night, though. Oh, my God, is he good. And then I went to see him do his jazz thing. And that was amazing, too. I never thought I could sit through that and not get bored. But Chris is just so, and one of his fingers doesn't even work. You know, he only uses like three fingers. He broke his, something happened to his finger and it doesn't.
It got slammed in a door in high school.
Yeah. And he plays. It's funny how you get these guys like Iommi had the same thing. He had an accident on his fingers and he's like, great. You know, I mean, it just amazes me that you could see someone like that. I listened to your Chris stuff and Chris was good, man, but you guys didn't talk about Damn the Machine at all. And I'm like, how could they, wouldn't he forget that he was in that band or something? I was
someone commented about that too. And I feel bad. I totally should have. There's so many times after interviews where I'm like, oh my God, I completely forgot about a fucking 10-year project that guy was
on. You think he would bring it up though, you know? I mean, that one, they've only made one album on A&M, but it's a great album, you know? And I got, the tour they went on was with Voivod. So I got to see Voivod and Dan the Machine every night.
What a lineup.
Like 6 weeks. Some of the tour had the Clutch opening, which didn't really fit in. And the Big F, which is this band that never went anywhere, did the rest of the tour. But seeing Voivod, and it was funny because I would take the band to record stores and out to dinner every day. That's what I did, or radio stations, whatever. And the guys from Voivod would tag along. Like, they came along with us to the heavy metal shop. And I remember that because there's a lot of photos of us all hanging out there at the heavy metal shop in Salt Lake City, which is probably one of the best metal stores in America. And the bands got along really well, and it was one of the most fun tours I ever was on. And I was on a lot of tours. That one, you know, it was like, you know, some nights there were 150 people there, you know, and other nights there were 300, 400, 500, you know. It wasn't like a big tour, but being on that, you know, going on that tour bus and bringing people on, Chris would talk to anyone that I wanted to introduce him to. His brother Mark was in the band. Dave Randy,
nicest
his father,
guy.
Don Randy, was like one of the great you know, Wrecking Crew guys in California recorded with all those hit records in the late 60s and 70s. So these guys were like great to be around. And when I listened to you have Chris on, I was like, that's a big score right there. You know, I haven't tried to get Chris yet, but I had
Good
a
luck,
feeling
man.
It would be difficult to schedule Chris Paul.
Good luck, man.
Yeah.
I got his phone number and which was like, whoa, you know, that's already as someone who like, cause like I see the thing is like people my age, you know what I mean? I see Chris Poland and like Megadeth and all these people at the same level. I see people from the '70s, you know, or the '60s, like just these legendary untouchable artists, you know? And to meet him and get his phone number was like, you know, I can die now.
Yeah,
I
didn't
can
you
die
track
happy.
Him down? You were telling me the story. Did you track him and Jeff Young down at a what was it, Comic-Con show or
So,
something?
So it was a show in Box. This is the craziest thing. I was working for Mick, my boss. Because it was a Comic-Con, the Nevermind shop, because everyone had booths, and he had a booth to sell records, so I would work the storefront or whatever. And it was pretty much a monkey's con. Mickey Dolenz was like the headliner, you know, main event.
Nice.
Bill Chadwick, who was like the fifth monkey or whatever, was there, who I met, you know, I got a picture with. And on a side note, Jeff Young and Chris Poland were going to be there. So I'm like, hey, Mick, you know, I don't care, whatever you do, fucking schedule me to work this. And he scheduled me, and, the manager, Vanny, she was going to work the whole weekend, but, unfortunately, I believe got sick and couldn't anymore. So Mick was like, do you just want to completely run everything? And like, you'll get a free hotel room and everything. And I'm like, yes. So I stayed the whole weekend. I got my original Peace Cell signed, and I got my So Far So Good So What signed.
Wow.
I got Jeff Young's phone number. We texted, and I'm like, hey, you want to do this? He sent me his room number. So I go up to his room, and it's like, oh my God. And we're sitting on the couch and we do it. You know, it ends. If you watch, it sucks because we're not mic'd up or anything. This is before I had my mics.
Yeah.
So it's just an iPhone shot thing on a tripod. And the interview ends with his manager like knocking on the door, like, let's go, you know, which was crazy. And that was great. I think Jeff Young, I think me and him, you know, have some issues at this point. But I, you know, nothing but love to him, you know, whatever. And then Chris Poland, I texted him, I got nothing. Then I ran into him in the lobby and I'm like, hey man, let's do this. And he's like, sorry, man, I got laryngitis. He's like, I can't do it. But listen, man, text me and we'll set something up. So I'm like, all right, good chance it'll never happen. You know, I ended up texting him. We texted, I think it was like 6 or 7 months until we did it. Because he kept saying, I'll get back to you. He kept saying, sorry, man, can't do that date anymore. I'll get back to you when I know what's up. Like, it was that back and forth for seven. And listen, Chris is the
he
nicest
knows you
guy.
Now.
He knows me. He's absolutely the nicest guy ever. Very busy, too. Like, he is so fucking busy. So I appreciated him taking the time out. But it was awesome, man. I got to also hang out with Jeff Young, too, because at night, I was hanging out and it was like 10 p.m. And I hit him up. I'm like, fuck it. You know, what do I have to lose? I hit up Jeff. I'm like, hey man, what's up? You know, want to hang out? So, and he invited me to his hotel and we just like, you know, sat on the porch and just talked, you know, and it was the story.
And I like how you conveniently left one thing out of the story. That's okay. I won't push you on that issue, and everyone's gonna be like, what was it, Steve? I'm not saying.
I think I left some hot things out of it. I left some very essential details out of it. But yeah,
it's okay.
We bonded over something. It was a good time. Very chill, down to earth dude. He showed me some of the unreleased tracks that he's working on with Ellefson. It was the coolest.
You
thing
had Dave
ever.
On your show too. Dave Ellefson's on
David
your show.
Ellefson. Yeah, that was one where I was like, what the hell has this show turned into? You know, because it used to be this stupid little, like, you know. So here's my thoughts on
I
the
know
album
that
Dope
feeling.
Smoker.
I know that feeling. It's a good feeling, though, isn't it? When you get bigger guests, you're like, wow, how did I get? Like, I had Louise Post from Veruca Salt on, and I was like, what? You know, it's like Tanya
That's
Donnelly from
crazy,
Belly,
man.
Juliana Hatfield. I'm like, oh, this is unbelievable, you know?
That's awesome. Do you ever feel like I it made me like a little bit feel like almost like a fraud, you know? Because it's like I feel like I
No.
never even deserved it for
Oh,
me, you know?
no,
Because
no, don't, no. I never feel that way, and you should never
really,
feel that way
because for
either.
me it's like
We're
for.
doing a service. Remember that. We're promoting these people's career. We're promoting their career for them. We're helping them. You must have publicists write. I got publicists writing me every day for trying to get their people on my show.
That's happened with me, and I've been picked up by like Loudwire many times and stuff, but it's like it's still like, you know, they deserve to be on fucking like Letterman. That's how I feel. Like these people deserve to be on like a talk show, and then I'm here, you know, in whatever fucking
You're
cave
doing
this
a
is.
great job. No, you're
I
wrong. Hey,
appreciate it.
listen,
I appreciate it.
I can't believe we've been talking for over an hour, but there's a couple of things I want to hit you on before I let you
It's
go.
felt like 10 minutes, man.
I just wanted to tell you that I really enjoyed the show that you rank. I love shows when I'm a geek, and I'm starting a whole separate podcast just to talk about shit and not interview people. And when you rank the Electric Wizards albums, I love that, man, because
Oh,
Electric
yeah.
Wizard is a band that I like want to get more into, you know. And and every time I listen, you know, their songs can be really long and you get lost in there, man. And you ranked them for me, so that was good. So now I'm going back and I'm listening to these albums and I'm like, fucking band is great. I was also going to tell you that there's a band in Boston called Kind. You should get them on your show. They're
Never
probably
heard
the
of them.
best stoner rock band in Boston.
No
Kind,
shit.
KIND. Their guitar player, Daryl Shepherd's fantastic.
I would love to get
Yeah.
connected with them. There's some great. Let me just, you know, sidetrack a little bit. There's some amazing local doom around here. I've had a couple of them on. Grave Tripper is great.
Great name.
Fog Wizard. There's some really, really great ones. Heavy Coven also.
Okay, those are names like Coven, Wizard. You got to have something like
Yeah, I
that
know.
to make it all
Honestly,
work.
I'm surprised there's no doom metal name generator, you know. Listen, man, you gotta see, if you like my ranking video, listen, I'm not sure if you've checked it out yet. I do one, and this is one where, you know, it's haunted me a little bit. I ranked every single Metallica song.
Yeah, you meant,
Did you see that?
wait a minute, every song?
Every song, not every album,
Oh, wow. How
every
many?
single,
Not
Jesus,
every
over a
song.
hundred, every, it's like a 2-hour video. Yeah, every song.
That's fantastic. I
From,
gotta check that
cause
out.
that's how I celebrated 72
I
seasons.
might steal that idea with another band, actually. That's a great idea.
It's a
I love that.
cause everyone does albums, you know what I mean? But it's like, fuck it, why not
Yeah, you know,
make everyone hate me?
when I did my top 20 of 2023, I did songs. I did my top 20 favorite songs. It ended up being more than 20, but I think that's great. Tell us a little bit about your comedy stuff and where, if someone wanted to check you out, or you know, is there a separate website? Give me a little.
100%. Yeah. And I'll just say this to wrap put a bow on that subject. Listen, man, you can do the songs or whatever, but just beware, people are gonna like want to send a throw a bomb through your window if you do that. Like I had comments that were like, I am depressed. You know, like people, like there were some that were like kind of mean too, like fuck you.
There's geeks out there like us, man, and they take it personally, man. You know,
yeah, I don't change it.
Sometimes when I hear someone ranks, you know, one of my favorite bands, you know, Queen is the one that gets me, you know. People
You're a
think
big
they,
Queen guy?
yeah, they think they know about Queen and they never even listen to Sheer Heart Attack or the first two records. And they're like,
Dude.
the band didn't start with Bohemian Rhapsody, okay? There was a lot of stuff before that.
It's like, don't be talking Queen if you don't know innuendo. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I
If you
love
like
that album.
what a if it wasn't for the production, that would, in my opinion, be like a top five for me personally. But
the song Innuendo, I always tell people, I'm like, if you're a Zeppelin fan, listen to the song Innuendo, okay? It's like the best Zeppelin song that Zeppelin didn't do.
Maybe a top three Queen song for me. Even
Wow.
Like I think, you know, even going slightly mad. He has the song, I think, Delilah or whatever, about his
Oh,
cat.
wow, you
That's a
really
funny
like
one.
that album.
Oh yeah, I have the vinyl of
Show
it
Must
too.
Go On is on that album too, which
It's
is
probably the could you maybe all right, or maybe I'll get to the comedy stuff in a
you and
second.
I cannot stay on topic, but that's
But
okay. I thought that would happen.
Maybe the greatest closing album of a rock band's discography in terms of like classic rock. What a way to go out with Show Must Go On, you know, about, you know, obviously what we know
Perfect
that's about.
song.
The bet, like, you know, on Tears in Heaven, whatever, you can count that, I guess. But that is
It Made in
for
Heaven,
me,
yeah.
Made in Heaven, whatever. That for me is the final Queen album. And I think that
It
is in
is.
terms of,
Made in Heaven was like B-sides and stuff anyways. It was like a
yeah.
B-sides record, you know?
But that record, I think, is in terms of like, you know, classic rock bands or whatever, the greatest, you know, closing out a discography album. Anyway, so I do
Well,
comedy.
let me just tell you before you do your comedy that my favorite Queen album is Sheer Heart Attack. Not my favorite Queen album. My favorite album is Sheer Heart Attack. To me, it's brilliant. It's one of the most brilliant 30-something minutes. It's not even that long. It's just fantastic. And that
So
was
good.
like before Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, Killer Queen's on there. You know, they had Keep Yourself Alive on the first record, which kind of was a hit song in a way, Liar. And then, you know, Killer Queen. And then Bohemian, I think, was like the fourth or fifth single that they ever released. But you got to listen to those early Queen records. Sorry.
You have to. Queen 1 and 2 are fantastic. So
Metal,
good.
very metal.
Very metal.
Yeah.
Listen, man, if you're going to do a song ranking, that's a one I'd love to see you do.
I think you and I have to do another show together, and we have to have a topic like that. We have to have a topic like that, and then we're going to do it. So if you want to do Queen, I'll do Queen. If you want to do
Listen, man,
another band, I'll do another band. Whatever you want to do.
Hit me up and I'm there.
Okay,
Seriously.
where are your comedy gigs? Where can people see you play?
So I do all over New England. I think the best way to know exactly what I'm doing is follow me on Instagram, Brandon Batic, Brandon Batick. You can follow me on Instagram. I try to post all my comedy shows all there on there, all future dates. I'm trying to be a little better with it. You know, I've been criticized for being like, hey, you can't just post it the day of the show.
No, you can't.
But no, I've been posting big, you know, here's my dates for the month and stuff. And I do all over New England. I do Rhode Island. I do Connecticut. I do New Hampshire. I do Maine. I do the whole circuit around here. I'm a feature act. You know, I think I've, you know, recently upgraded from opener. I've only been doing it 2 years, which for what I've been told, you know, I'm making strides. I opened for the band Beatallica a little under a year ago, and I did 20 minutes at the Sonia in Boston.
Oh, good club.
Yeah,
Used
it
to
was a
be TT the Bears.
Oh, really?
It used to be called TT the Bears. They just moved the stage to the other side of the room and made it bigger.
Interesting. Well, it was a great stage, and I did 20 minutes and people loved it. I have a lot of bits and stuff about, like, I have stuff about Ozzy, I have stuff about metal. So it really
Are any
flowed
of your
in.
shows online? Is there a set on YouTube?
I have not posted anything, no. Because it's like, I feel like I'm being 2 years in, you know, it's like, I feel like I don't want to post something and then a year later be like, I kind of hate that actually. Even though, you know, it's not like I'm bombing or anything. And I've had people tell me to post stuff. But you know, down the line, I think what I'll do is I'll post some like TikToks on my YouTube or whatever, you know, reels, shorts, whatever they're called.
Yeah, that's a good
so
idea.
People can see, you know, that I actually like just to prove I'm actually doing this.
I haven't heard you do comedy yet, and I'm already convinced, man.
Cool. But yeah, man, that's what it is. You can follow me on Facebook or shoot me a friend request on Facebook.
And also, Disturbing the Peace, there's a Instagram page. Instagram. There's a pentagram page on. I was trying to say it. There's a pentagram page for Disturbing the Peace on Instagram.
That's more fitting, actually, yeah. If anything. So my podcast, Disturbing the Priest, I'm on Facebook. You can like it on Facebook. You can follow on Instagram. I'm on Spotify. I'm on all the, so you can stream it, the audio, or you can watch it on YouTube, which I think is what people prefer. And now officially.
That's interesting because more people listen to my show than watch it. Maybe it's because you're so much better to look at than I am.
You got to grow the hair out, man.
If I showed you pictures of what I used to look like, I had your hair, man. I had your hair, but those days have passed me by, unfortunately.
But yeah, and officially, as of yesterday, I am officially on Patreon.
Oh, nice.
I put out episodes every Friday, but I have a bunch in the bank because I'm moving and I don't want to, you know, move and then be like, I have 2 days to put out an episode that I don't have recorded, you know? So I like to have a bunch in the bank. So if you want to see,
man.
there's like 8 unreleased interviews. So if you want to ever see, you know, it's all the rest of them, and then I'll have exclusive content on there. $3 a month. I feel like that's not a crazy ask, you know. $3 a month. That's what, like what, a Cliff Bar, you know, a Milky Way. That's not bad.
I'm just saying, but you can do mine for $1 a month. Patreon.com/TwistedRico.
You're really doing a dollar?
Well, I have the lowest tier as a dollar, but you can do 5, 10, bad. 20. Some people
I don't
have
done tiers,
more.
Man.
Someone was on my page once, unfortunately, for only 3 months for $100 a month. And I wish I could get that person back, but you know.
What?
They were feeling generous at the time.
What were you selling, nudes or something?
Oh,
what were you
no.
doing for $100 a month?
It would have been -$100 if I was selling.
Yeah.
Hey, Brandon, thanks a lot, man, for coming on the show.
A pleasure.
Appreciate
anytime,
it.
Man.
All right,
anytime.
Bro. Later. Catching Hell, Twilight Mind. Love that track, man. Brandon put me in a metal mood. What an interesting cat, man. You know, 25 years old, man. He's already like so far ahead of the game. We talked about doing another show together, you know, where we can geek out a little more. Because as you probably noticed, we had trouble staying on topic there because we just wanted to talk about music. And you know what? That's why we're here, right? To talk about music. And that's what we did. I hope you enjoyed it, because I certainly did. Speaking of enjoying, I enjoy hearing from you all. Please write me at twistedrico@gmail.com. If you're a musician or a songwriter and you have music, send it over. You might hear it here. You might even hear it on the Mirror Stars podcast. We also have an Instagram page, a Facebook, Threads, YouTube page, where you can watch the interview that Brandon, and I just did. More, it's not really an interview, but it's more like a conversation. All right. We also have a TikTok page at Twisted Rico where you can watch clips from the show. And please consider supporting this podcast on our Patreon page, patreon.com/TwistedRico. That's going to do it for this time. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive. Time.